Okay, welcome to Computer Science 50, Walkthrough 5. Today we're going to cover Problem Set 5, Forensics, which is due in 2 weeks on Friday. So first, what topics are covered in this problem set? First topic is file I/O. Does everyone know what that is? Any functions that are used for file I/O? Yep.
Fclose, fread, fopen.
Mm-hmm. Fclose, fread, fopen. Those functions are commonly used in file input and output. That's basically reading files and saving files. It's nothing scary. You've been using that. Actually, you may if you did the Hacker Edition, you might have used it for the crypto program. But if not, then it's very simple. Once you know the functions, it's very easy to do. And the other topic is data structures, which is how data is represented in memory and on disk. It means how certain files are presented on disk and how they're saved by programs. And hexadecimal, which is just the way to represent numbers, and pointers, which was a major topic covered in last week's lectures. And the programs that we'll be making, there are three programs: Whodunit, which is sort of like a forensics program. Whodunit and Recover are both forensics programs. And Resize is a image resizing program, and Recover is a data recovery program. The problem set is longer than the other problem sets that we've had, and that is also part of the reason why there's 2 weeks to do this. So I'd suggest that you start early, especially when you're trying to get used to the functions and the concepts that are covered. Okay. So first, the problem set talks about bitmaps, and can anyone tell me what bitmaps are? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I guess a map of bits with colors for bits.
Right, yeah. So a bitmap is a map of bits, as the word suggests. And every bit represents a color that each pixel is. So a pixel is one small block of color in the bitmap. And so, for example, a 1024 times 768 pixel image consists of 1024 pixels in the width direction and 768 pixels in the height direction. It's just basically the size, except we're not using centimeters and inches here because a computer screen isn't always, it's not always conducive to those measurements, so we're using pixels here. Okay, so we've talked about pixels. Each pixel's color is represented as levels of blue, green, and red. It's actually represented as red, green, and blue, but the data is represented as blue, green, and red, so we'll call it blue, green, and red here. So I have here 00FF in blue, 002FF, 002FF in green, and 002FF in red. What do I mean by 002FF? They look like number ranges of some sort. What's FF? Yep?
Is that hexadecimal?
Yeah, FF is actually hexadecimal, and it basically represents how much blue, how much green, and how much red there is. So zero is no, for example, if the blue part was 00, then it means that there's no blue. And if the blue part was FF, then it means there's a lot of blue. So you know in physics where you can represent colors using blue, green, and red. If you have three light torches, blue, green, and red, and you shine different volumes of light into one point, then you can generate all sorts of colors. So that's basically what it's doing. If you tell the computer to display this much of blue and this much of green and this much of red, then it'll be able to display any color that it can display. Okay, so does anyone have any questions about that representation? Because this becomes pretty important in the first part of the problem set. Okay. So a bitmap is, as you said, a series of consecutive pixels described after each other. So basically, if you have an image and if it's blue, if there's a blue bar at the top, then you'll see lots of pixels represented as blue. So it might say FF00000, which is the representation for blue, right? Repeated many times. So what's the representation for green, for complete green and no other colors?
You
could say zero, or it's usually written in eight using 8 characters. So what would it be?
8 or 6?
Oh, sorry, 6. Yeah.
00FF00.
Yeah, 00FF00. That's the representation for green. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you say it is written, where is it written like that?
Okay, so when I say it's written like that, it means, for example, on disk in a bitmap, it's represented as those bits. And we'll cover that in the next slide. Okay. So besides those pixels that are represented in the disk file, we also have this metadata, which is the first 54 bytes of a bitmap. It basically represents various kinds of data, such as the width, the height, the color representation, which program made it. That kind of data is put in the first 54 bytes of the bitmap file. And that's also something we'll use in the resize program. Okay, any questions? All right, so we'll take a look at an example of a bitmap. So this is the smiley.bmp bitmap, which is in the problem set. As you can see, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pixels by 8 pixels. And it only has white or red. Okay. And when we look at this kind of bitmap, we can look at it in Photoshop or Preview or anything like that. But what we're doing here is looking at the actual file as it is on disk. So what we want to do is to look at it in a program called a hex editor, which lets us see how the file is represented on disk using hexadecimal numbers. Okay, so one such program is XXD. This is installed on many Unix-like operating systems, including the cloud servers. And we'll send it a bunch of arguments. Basically, this one is specifying, these two specify how we want to represent the numbers. And this tells us that, do you want to guess what this means? 54, S54? What could this be? Okay, so this basically means you start at the 54th byte, because we want to ignore the metadata at the beginning for now. And then this is the file name. So we'll actually run this command, and I'll show you what it looks like. Ooh. Okay, so the file is smiley.bmp. All right, okay, looks like we need to resize the window here. Okay, so maybe this wasn't the best demonstration ever, but what we're seeing here is a series of bytes or of data in the bitmap, and we're seeing FF, 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 0, 0, 0, 0, FF, and so on. What are these representing? Well, we talked about how bitmaps are represented on disk, and we're looking at a bitmap. What are each of these octets, these 8 characters? Pardon?
White or red.
Yeah, these are white or red. So what is FF, FF, FF? It's white, yeah. So that means no red, no green, and no. It means lots of green, lots of red, and lots of blue, which equals white. And 0, 0, 0, 0, FF is... is red, yeah. That's because there's no green and no blue, but there's a lot of red. So basically, it's just showing a map of each of the pixels or bits in the bitmap. Okay? You have any questions about this? Okay. I'll actually prove to you that this is a good representation of the bitmap by showing you the next slide, which is... oops. All right. Okay, so this is basically the same representation, but I colored it in PowerPoint using red and white. And if you look at it from a distance, you can probably see that the smiley face is there. Even in a hex editor, you can see the bitmap. Right? Okay. So I talked about the metadata that's in a bitmap. So this is taken straight from the PDF, and you can see here that there's a There's a bunch of metadata called the bitmap file header, and another bunch called the bitmap info header, and then the triplets of the RG, the red, green, blue sequences begin. That's each of the pixels that we saw after the 54th byte, the one that you saw in my demonstration of XXD. Okay? So let's see what these file headers actually are. They're called headers, but they're not actually related to the .h files that you've been seeing in previous problem sets. It's basically a specification that Microsoft originally made and made available in Windows 95, but we're still using the same kind of bitmaps today to represent their metadata. So you can see here that the names suggest that, for example, BI width probably is the width of the image, BI height is probably the height of the image, and another interesting one is BI size image, the size of the image. And in bitmap file header, at the top, we can see BF size, which you know might be the size of the structure, the data structure. And there's also BF reserved one, which sounds like it's reserved for something else, so we don't use it. So we don't know what this actually is, but we do know that there's this kind of header that's in every bitmap file. There's a value for each of these keys in this header. So it's not like the names are in the bitmap. It means there's a particular size and there's a width and height in the image. Okay. So if you want to find out what these headers actually contain, then you can actually take a look at the official spec that Microsoft made. This is linked from the top of bmp.h, which is in the distribution code. You can see here we have, it's very small. So this is an explanation of bitmap info header. So the bitmap info header structure contains information about the dimensions and color format of a DIB, device independent bitmap, which is basically a fancy way of saying bitmap file. And so we have these, we have each of the, so up here we have each of the elements in the structure that we were looking at. This particular one is bitmap info header. So as you can see, there's BI size, there's width, there's height, there's compression, there's size image. So it means that these fields are present in every bitmap image that we look at. Okay. When we're dealing with this kind of thing, we want to look at this kind of documentation. This is a practice that you'll use when you create programs using code that other people have written, because there's often documentation that tells you what's in the file headers and how they've made the programs, so you can interoperate with their code. And you also want to actually take a look at what exactly is under the hood by actually looking at some files and investigating what's under them. So the problem set actually describes how you can use GDB, the GNU debugger, to debug the copy.c program with a particular bitmap. And by printing out the contents of these headers, bitmap file header and bitmap info header, you can actually see what's contained inside them in real life. Okay, so I won't go over that now, but it's in the problem set, so do take a look at that if you get stuck or if you're curious about this kind of thing. Okay, so I'll show you bmp.h, which sort of brings all this into context. Let's see. Okay. Right, so this is bmp.h, which I think David wrote. It's at the top, it's just defining some common data types. It's just aliasing some common data types that are used in Windows programming to the actual values. For example, typedef unsigned char byte. Has everyone seen typedef? Yeah? It's just aliasing the word byte to an unsigned char. And the same for dword, which is an unsigned long. And long, which is actually a long, and word, which is an unsigned short. Okay, so that's not very interesting. Let's see. Okay, if we go down, we see what's really interesting, the bitmap file header, which is one of the two headers that are in every bitmap. You can see that we've defined each of the fields that are in a bitmap as a struct. BF type, size, reserved one, reserved two, and off bytes, off bits. So this is a struct, and everyone knows what a struct is, right? It's basically just a collection of fields in one thing. We cover this in today's lecture. What it's doing is that it's defining this collection of fields as a, you know, you can hold it as one variable, and it'll be a it'll contain all your type, sizes, and reserve bits. So we have to specify it this way because Microsoft said so. We don't need to worry about the names, but the order in which these fields come, and the types, the sizes of these fields is also important. David's done all the implementation, so all you have to do is to actually use this struct as it's implemented. One thing that might be of interest is the attribute pact, which basically tells the compiler not to to try and to byte align to make sure that the struct has padding in it, and this is because of memory reasons. But you don't really need to worry about that because when we're programming for Windows, if we do have those padding spaces, then you might not be able to actually read the metadata. But that's besides the point here because it's already implemented and. Because it's packed, we can directly import metadata from bitmaps. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so we'll go down to bitmap info header, which was the other header. It's very similar to bitmap file header, except it just contains different fields. Okay, and we'll see how we can actually use this bmp.h file in our programs to read metadata from files. Right. The other file that's in the distribution code in the BMP directory is this copy.c. And as the description says, it copies a BMP piece by piece just because. I don't know what that's from. Anyway, what it does is if you specify two arguments, the in file and the out file, it'll just copy the bitmap from input file to output file. Not very interesting because it's just doing the same thing as a CP. As the CP command. So we'll see how it does this. So at the top of main, we're just checking the arguments. You're all familiar with this now. It's just checking for three arguments. And we specify the input file here and the output file, and the file names here. And then here we're doing some file IO. File in pointer equals fopen in file R. So can anyone tell me what this is doing? It looks like there's a call to fopen involved. Yeah?
Is it opening up in the file and then establishing the pointer to the first bit of that file?
Yes, that's right. So it's actually opening in file, which is a file name. It's a string. And it's opening it read-only, which the R stands for read-only. And it's assigning not the first bit of the file, but a file handle. So basically a representation of the file. Just a representation to the, it's like the first bit. It's just a pointer to the file. It's not actually the file, but it's a pointer to the file. And it's of type file pointer. The pointer is called inpointer. And then we have to check that if inpointer is null, then we have to exit because, for example, if the file doesn't exist, then the fopen call will fail. If the file is not readable to you, if the permissions aren't set correctly, then it will also fail. So we have to check that if inpointer is null, then we have to fail. That's like malloc, where you have to check for null and then fail if it's null. Okay. And then we've opened the input file. So this is akin to opening a file in, say, Microsoft Word. It doesn't actually read everything into your program or into memory, but it basically just says that I have a stake on this file now. I'm going to use it. Same thing for out file. We're opening out file as well. But you notice here that out file is actually opened with W, which is write. So we're opening infile. We're reading the contents of infile, and we're dumping them into outfile, right? Because this is a copy program. So we have to open in file and say that we're reading from it, and we have to open out file and say we're writing to it, so that the operating system knows what we're doing with the files. Okay, and then the same thing here, we have to check for null in case that we couldn't create the file. Okay, so this is where it starts to get interesting. Bitmap file, oops, sorry. Bitmap file header bf. So what is bitmap file header? What type is this? Or rather, well, it's a bitmap file header type. Where did we define this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we defined this in the header file, bmp.h. So we defined that as a struct. So we can use it now, finally. And we're just defining a bitmap file header called bf. So it's the same as saying int bf, except it's not an int, it's a bitmap file header. Okay. So this is how you define an instance of a struct in code. And then what are we doing here in line 48? F read the address of bf, size of bitmap file header, one int pointer. What is this doing? Any guesses? Intuitively, what does it look like it's doing?
Mm-hmm. I guess it's just copying the header.
Yeah, so we're not actually copying it into the out file right now, but we're copying we're basically copying the contents of the bitmap file header that was in the input file into memory. Okay? So we're reading that into the bitmap file header buffer, BF. Okay, does everyone get that? Yeah? Stop me if you don't. So BF is an instance, but fread expects you to provide a pointer. So that's why we're doing and BF, and being address of. Okay? So and BF is a pointer to the BF instance that we initialized in line 47 here. Okay, so we've read, basically what that fread call means is read one block of memory that represents a bitmap file header. So size of bitmap file header is the size of an empty bitmap file header. And then we're saying read one of those into our buffer and from im pointer into bf. Okay? I'll say that again. It's reading one empty block of memory the size of a bitmap file header. It's reading one of those chunks into our buffer called bf from in pointer. Okay. And then line 51 and 52 do the same for the info header, which is basically the header that comes after bitmap file header in the input file. Okay. Great. So now we've read those into memory. We haven't actually written anything to output file yet. Output file is empty. But what are we likely going to do with these headers? We're copying one bitmap from another, so we're probably going to do what to these headers that we've just written into memory? Well, there's this empty output file that's hanging around. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what this program is doing is it's actually just reading each of the components of the input file into the output file sequentially. So we've read those into memory, and then we'll likely write them, as we'll see down here in line 60. In line 63 and 6. But before that, what are we doing here? The comment is sort of obscure. It says, ensure infile is likely a 24-bit uncompressed bitmap 4.0. So basically what this is doing is that it's just checking that the bitmap that you're working with, the input bitmap, is the type of bitmap that we want to work with. Because since Windows 95, Microsoft has released some versions of bitmaps that are not compatible with each other and have different bitmap file headers and bitmap info headers. So we first need to check that the BF type, which is a very obscure signature represents the version of bitmaps that we're working with. And you can also see that we're looking at some other fields in the bitmap file header and bitmap info header to check that we're working with the right version. Okay, so you'll actually be using the same code in the in resize and in whodunit. So you can just copy these lines if you want. Okay. So as I said earlier, line 63 and line 66 are just writing the headers into our output file. And the syntax is very similar. It's actually identical. But the function call here is fwrite instead of fread. So we're writing one chunk of memory that's the size of a bitmap file header into out pointer from bf, which was the buffer that we read into earlier on. Okay. So does everyone understand what's going on here? Basically, it's just reading from one place, and this is our buffer. Then it's reading the header, and then after a while, it's just writing that back into the output file. Okay. Right. And then we have some code, and here we have some interesting stuff here. What are we doing here? We're iterating over infile's scan lines. What is a scan line? So a scan line is basically just a row in the bitmap. So if you're looking at a television, then you might see these scan lines as the television tries to draw each of the pixels in the TV. It's the same concept here, except, really it's just the same concept. We're writing all the pixels like this. So each scan line is a row in the bitmap. So we're iterating over that with this for loop in line 72. And then in line 74, we're iterating each of the columns in the pixel. Much like Mario, it's just going over each of the pixels in our input bitmap. And then what is it doing here in line 78, 81, and 84? Does anyone want to take a stab at this? What is this code doing? So we established this iterating over each pixel in the image, and then what is it doing? What does it seem to be doing?
Mm-hmm. It stores them in triple?
Yeah, so it's storing them into triples. It's reading each pixel in the image, and then it looks like it's actually reading. It's doing the same thing here as it did for the headers. It's reading each pixel into this type called RGB triple. And I actually didn't go over that, but it's also another type that's defined in BMP.h. It's right at the bottom of BMP.h. If you see here, type def struct byte blue, green, and red. So what this RGB triple is it's basically a representation of red, green, and blue as bytes in a struct. Okay, so it's like a byte-sized representation of each of the pixels. So you might have one struct that represents green and one struct that represents orange. Okay, so we use this RGB triple struct to represent each color in the image. So in copy.c, we're reading each of the pixels using fread into triple, and then we're doing the same thing that we did before. We're writing each of the one pixel that we're working with into the output file. Okay? So it seems to be like a linear search kind of thing, right? It's going through each of the pixels in the bitmap, and it's reading from the input file, dumping that into the buffer called RGB triple, and then dumping that into output. Okay, so it's pretty simple, right? The concept here is just going from one thing into the other, into another. Okay, so we have below that. Some interesting thing here, FC. So this is actually related to the padding, which we'll talk about now. Let's see. Oops. Okay, so if you've read the PDF, you'll see that each scan line in the bitmap has to be a multiple of 4. Of 4 bytes. And if it's not 4 bytes, then you have to add something that's called padding at the end of the file, at the end of the row. Okay. So this is part of the bitmap specs. I'll show you exactly what padding looks like by opening this example called small.bmp. see. Okay, so we have our terminal window here. Okay. So I'm just trying to resize the window so it doesn't word wrap again. Okay, so. Okay. Okay, so this is small.bmp, which is also one of the files in the distribution code. And you can see here, I've omitted the first 54 bytes of the bitmap because that's metadata that we're not interested in right now. But you can see here that it's, so does everyone know what small.bmp looks like? It's just a green box. It's really small. It's 3 pixels by 3 pixels. You can see here that it uses only two colors, green and white. So what's, just an exercise, what's green here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 00FF00 is green, and again, FFFFFF is white. Okay, so this is the best representation of it because it doesn't show the heading very well. Okay, so this is a better representation of it. So you see here the colors, it's 3 pixels by 3 pixels, that's from 00FF00, green, green, green. And then we go down, green, green, and then there's white in the middle, and there's green, and then green, green, green. Okay, so it's just a box, 3 pixel by 3 pixel box. But we have some very interesting, zero zeros here at the end of each line. What are these doing here? These are actually padding, which I talked about. So the bitmap specification, as I said, requires that each scan line be a multiple of 4 bytes. Okay. So how many bytes is each pixel going to be? Yeah.
3 bytes per pixel.
It's 3 bytes per pixel. Why is it 3 bytes per pixel? There's a hint in at the bottom of bmp.h. RGB triple defines each of the pixels as bytes. So a byte is a type called a byte, and it's 1 byte long. So that's why it's called a byte. So each of these pixels contains red representation of red, green, and blue. And each of those representations takes up 1 byte. 3 bytes of space. So 1 pixel is 3 bytes, okay? Did I say that correctly? Each pixel is 3 bytes, and each color is 1 byte each. So, so if we have 3 pixels, then how long should one scan line be? If each pixel is 3 bytes and we have 3 pixels, then easy. 9 pixels. So 9, is that a multiple of 4? No. So that's why we have to have this padding at the end. So how many bytes of padding do we have?
3.
Yeah, we have 3 bytes of padding here, 00, 00, 00. Okay? So in hexadecimal, each hexadecimal digit represents 4 bits, and there are 8 bits to a byte. So each hexadecimal digit is half a byte. So if we have 3 bytes, then we have, so there are 3 bytes of padding at the end, which brings the total up to 12, which is indeed a multiple of 4. So our padding is correct here. So I can't explain why there should be padding, but there should be padding in a bitmap. So we have to add this padding, and we have to ignore this padding when we're reading from a bitmap. Okay, so that's what the code in copy.h does. Okay, so there's a line that I intentionally skipped over, line 69 in copy.h, And what it's doing is calculating how much padding we need, how much padding each line in the input file actually has. Okay, so what is it doing here? It's using bi.bi-width, which is the width of the original image in pixels, and then it's multiplying by size of RGB triple, which is what is size of RGB triple?
3 bytes.
Yeah, it's 3 bytes. So size of RGB triple, which means with multiplying the width by 3, essentially, and then we're modding by 4. Why are we modding by 4 here? We're looking at the first mod 4. So remember that we want to make sure that each row is a multiple of 4. So we're trying to calculate how much padding we need to add to the end. Okay. So why mod 4? So let's think of an example. For example, if the width in small.bmp, the width is 3 pixels, right? So it's doing 3 times 3, size of RGB triple, which is 3. So 3 times 3, which is 9. And 9 mod 4 is 1, yeah, it's because it's the remainder of 9 divided by 4. And then, so we have 1. So 4 minus 1 is 3. So we have 3 bytes of padding, right? That seems to work out, because indeed small.bmp had 3 bytes of padding at the end of every row. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, and then we have this extraneous mod 4. What is this doing? I spent like 5 minutes trying to figure this out earlier on. In what case is the outermost mod 4 necessary? It doesn't seem necessary, right? Yeah?
Because I guess if you do the first mod 4, mm-hmm. you get 0, 4 yeah. minus 0 is 4.
Yeah, that's right. So if we have 4 minus 0, so if it turns out that our image is actually perfectly perfectly a multiple of 4 and we don't need any padding, then 4 minus 0 will return 4. And we don't want another 4 bytes of padding. We just want to say 4 mod 4, so 0. So we want to say don't pad if we already have a multiple of 4. Yeah, that's good. So that's what our padding line is doing. Does everyone understand now? Does everyone get it? Yeah? OK, so we've calculated the amount of padding that we need in bytes. And then, so in this line here, we're actually using that value of padding, f seek in pointer padding seek cur. What is this doing? It's seeking. So it's basically like pressing the fast forward button on your tape recorder. It's saying just seek padding bytes into the file. So basically ignore what we're seeking over. So ignore the padding and then basically just loop over it. Okay? It's so when we talk about file I/O in Unix or in C, what we're doing is basically we're walking through the file. So we start at the beginning of the file, and then we by calling fread, we read particular bytes. And when we're reading bytes, we also walk over the bytes. Okay, but when we want to skip over the bytes, and when we don't want to read those bytes into memory, we can just call fseek to skip over those bytes. Okay? So that's what we're doing. We're just ignoring the padding in this line 38 here. After we've ignored that padding, we also have to actually write padding into our output file, because our input file and output file is supposed to be identical, right? And if we don't have the padding that we used to have in the output file, then our bitmap isn't going to work. So what we're doing here is just fputc, which is basically putting a character into the file, writing a character into the file, fputc, 0x00 is the padding that we saw, right? The null byte into out pointer. So I guess you could actually just have read that into a buffer and then written that, read the padding into a buffer and then written that padding back into the output buffer. But I mean, it's doing the same thing here, right? Because what is the buffer going to contain anyway? The padding is always zero, so we might as well just ignore it and then write our own zeros into the output file. Okay. So if you're confused, it's it's basically doing the same thing as the two portions above, read write the header and read write the pixels, and now read write the padding. Okay. Yeah.
So if it says at the 0x00, mm-hmm. what will it actually print, or what will it put the number?
Mm-hmm. So the question was, if I put in 0x00, what is it actually going to write? So in XXD, we saw each of the numbers represented as hexadecimal numbers, right? So 00 there actually represents a null byte in the file. So you can 0x00 is actually the same as writing in single quotes /0. Okay, so it's just writing a null byte into the file. So it's basically if you're reading and writing a string, it would be a null byte. If you're reading writing a byte in a file, then it's 0x00. It's basically the same thing. It's just a null byte. Okay? Does that
So we ignore the 0x?
Yeah. So 0x is actually just part of the C specification. It just means that our number is a hexadecimal number. So if we didn't have 0x, then it would treat it as a decimal number. But it's the same thing anyway, because 0 and 0 are the same. Okay. So, and at the end, we also have to remember to close the input file and the output file, so other programs can use those files now. Okay, so fopen, fread, fseek, and fclose. Those are just four main functions that you want to use in file IO and C. Okay, does anyone have any questions about copy.c, padding, bitmaps, and file IO? No? Okay, so we'll take a quick tape break, and then we'll go into the whodunit program and resize program. Okay. Right, welcome back. So we'll talk about the whodunit program. What you're seeing here is the clue from the PDF, or not. Basically what it is it's just a bunch of red pixels, and within those red pixels you can sort of faintly see the blue pixels that represent the clues in the clue. So it looks like a jumbled mess, and so how might you retrieve the blue pixels from this in real life? Yeah?
Turn red to white?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could turn the red into white, but how would you do that using using tools that you might have in real life?
Maybe change triple.rgbt red?
you would change RGB triple in your program. But how would you do it how do you do it yourself, like without a
cellophane.
Yeah, with a piece of cellophane, right? With a piece of red cellophane. What does a piece of red cellophane do when you're looking at this kind of image? When you're like looking into it. Yeah? Okay. Yeah?
Turns white to red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's turning the red into white. Yeah, so basically what it's doing is that it's not letting the red pixels through, it's just the red colors through. It's just letting the other colors shine through the cellophane. Okay? So we're going to actually use the same kind of, concept in solving this mystery using the whodunit.c program. Okay, so you already told us how we would go about doing it. So we had those triples, right, that represented each of the colors, each of the pixels in our image. And what could we do with that triple? Well, we're going to turn the red into white. So, we could turn red into white, or we could, we could basically turn off the red, so we only see the other colors, right? So, how would we do that? Yeah, so we'll walk through each of the pixels in the image, and we'll convert the pixels that appear to be red into white, or we'll just turn off the red representation in that pixel. Okay, so how could we do this? We don't want to spend hours doing it. We could actually do this in like 2 minutes, but using some existing code. What code can we use? Yeah, we can actually use copy.c, and it's just two lines or one line that we're adding to copy.c to make this program. Okay, so we go back to copy.c. So we have here copy.c. Which portion seems to be important in solving whodunit? A hint is it's on the screen. Yeah, which lines? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For loop?
Yeah, the for loop. Which for loop? Well, yeah. So the for loop was going through each of the rows and then going through each of the columns in the row. So what were we doing in the innermost clause? We were reading each of the pixels into the buffer, right? RGB triple. Triple was our buffer that contained each of the the pixels in our image. So what can we do here? Once we've read the triple, we can. What were we talking about?
Write a theorem.
Pardon?
Write a theorem.
Write
the pixel theorem. Put that in your
mm-hmm. Yeah, so we read the pixel into memory, and then we wrote that buffer into memory straight away. But instead of doing that straight away, we can... Red cellophane?
Change it.
Yeah, we can change it. We don't need to just copy and paste the same thing from input to output. In fact, we can just meddle with triple in line 82 between 81 and 83. Okay, so I'll leave the actual implementation up to you, but it's just a case of just turning off the red bits. Okay, just turning off the red representation in the 3-byte struct. Okay, does everyone have an idea of what you might do? Don't brood over it too much because it's just a case of just changing one line or two lines. Okay, so with that implemented, we'll go on to resize. All right. Okay, so resize is our program that resizes an image. You give it a non-negative integer. From 0 to 100, and it'll basically just copy an image, but make it bigger. So if you use Photoshop or any of those image editing software, then they can also do the same thing. They can resize an image to make it bigger. Okay, so there are two steps involved in resize. First, we have to make the necessary changes to the metadata, because remember that the metadata contains fields like the width and the height of the image. And obviously, we have to change those if we're trying to resize an image. Okay, and then the second step is to write out the new pixels, of course. So we're not, as in copy.c, we are simply copying each of the pixels verbatim into the output file. But now we're going to actually make those pixels bigger, and then put those into the output file. Okay, and it turns out that we can actually use the same copy.c framework for reading and writing from the input file to the output file. Okay? So we'll see how we can actually do that. So as I said, the first step is to resize the metadata. We're not actually resizing it, we're just changing some fields in the metadata. What fields might we want to change in bitmap file header and bitmap info header? What looks like it needs to be changed if we are resizing the image and therefore changing the width and height of the image? And the size.
Mm-hmm.
The size? But in particular, which one? So there's BF size at the top, there's BI size, and there's BI size image. Yeah, I don't know either. Which how could I look this up? How would I know which one to change?
Look up on the Microsoft.
Yeah, so to look these fields up, we'd just go on the Microsoft website that's linked from bmp.h, and then we'd find out what these fields are. So it turns out that BF size and BI size are actually just representing the sizes of the structs. So BF size is the size of bitmap file header, and BI size is the size of bitmap info header. So that's not going to change. It's actually not related to the image at all. But BI size image is what we want. It's representing the sizes of the image. Okay. And so if you get confused about any of these fields, then you can just go on the MSDN page and look them up from the official documentation. Okay. So does everyone understand how you might go about changing these fields? Remember that in our whodunit.c program, we read in a pixel, and then we manipulated it, and then we wrote it into the output file. We can do the same for the headers as well. We can read a header into the buffer, and then change the header there, and then save it to the output file. Okay. So it's not the case that we have to read something and then save that verbatim into the output file. We can actually just change it, as we'll need to do for resize.c. Okay. So for example, if we were trying to change the width of the image, and we say we want the image to be 4 times bigger than the original, what might we want to do with what field? So there's BI width. Yeah, that does that look manipulable? We might want to change that, right? So BI width, it should be what? Mm-hmm. It should be 4 times the original BI width. Okay. And then once we've got that new value, we'd want to save that into the output file. Okay. So is everyone okay with that? Yeah? Okay, so once we've resized the metadata, what we need to do is to resize the pixels as well, because we're not going to go anywhere, just resizing the metadata. So when I call resize, which is our program, with 4, which is 4 times the original, small.bmp to large.bmp, what are we actually doing? So this is our original bitmap. This is actually what small.bmp looks like, except without the rounded border. But when we resize this, make it 4 times bigger, then the original pixel, the blue dot is representing 1 pixel in the image. And it becomes 4 of those pixels in the resulting image, because we've resized it. No, wait, this is not 4 times, this is 2 times, sorry. So this is what the output of resize 2, small.bmp, large.bmp. Okay? So we see here that the width of that pixel has been stretched 2 times, and the height of that pixel has been stretched as well. So originally what was 1 pixel is now 4 pixels. Okay? And we have to do this because pixels can't be stretched. You have to actually stretch it yourself over pixels. Okay. So how can we do this? How can we read an image and then make it 2 times or 4 times bigger than the original? Okay, so we'll go back to copy.c. Okay, so we have copy.c here. So here we were, so this is part of the code where it reads and writes each pixel in the image. And then here we were going over each of the rows in the image, right? And then here we're going through each of the columns in that particular row that we're working with. So for example, if we wanted to, let's say let's make a resize program that just resizes horizontally, that just stretches our image in the horizontal direction, and we don't care about the vertical direction, we just leave that the same, then how would we do it? So we're reading 1 pixel from in line 81 in F, using the fread, and then we're writing that pixel into the output file in line 84 with fwrite. We're just writing 1 copy of it, right? But if we wanted to write, if we wanted to resize 4 times, then what could we do? Yeah? Yeah, you can just write it four times over, and then the row will be four times as big, right? Or rather, each pixel will be represented four times in the output file. And that's the same thing as just stretching that pixel four times. Is that good? Okay, so now we can do horizontal resizing. That seems to be pretty easy, right? It's just, we'll probably just have another for loop that wraps around the fwrite. So we're calling fwrite as many times as n when we're resizing n times as big. So how about vertically? How are we going to resize vertically? It's a little bit more complicated than resizing horizontally, because the problem is we're reading each pixel like so. So if we want to stretch a pixel horizontally, then we have to affect the row that's beneath it, right? But since we're reading each row at a time, it's not going to be able to say, hey, watch out, I've already written a pixel there, so don't overwrite it with your own pixels to the next row. Does everyone sort of get that? It's the problem is, so let's see what the problem is. The problem is the for loop on the outside, because it's just going to write to the next row anyway. Okay, so how can we do it? There are a couple of ways you can do this. Instead of just reading and writing each row on the spot, you could so what we want to do is to separate the writing portion from the code that iterates through each of the original rows, each of the scan lines. So what we can do when we have to separate those kinds of things is use a buffer. Okay, so we'll read an entire row into the buffer first, and then we'll think about how many times that row needs to be repeated. And then we'll start writing those rows. And then in that way, we won't clobber any of the subsequent rows in the original image. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, so how can we read an entire row into memory? Each element that we're reading in, each row is composed, is a bunch of triples, RGB triples. So what do we do when we want to save something into memory, save a big chunk of things into memory? Yeah, we use malloc. So we first mallocate a large chunk of memory that represents the row, and then we'll read the row into that mallocated memory. And then after we've done that, we'll go through each of the rows in the block of data that we just allocated, and then write it n number of times in the row, in subsequent rows. Yes.
So this is after you've made the horizontal
figure. Is this after the we've made the horizontal lines horizontal resize? We can do it at the same time. So while we write each of the rows, we'll have two for loops. So inside the loop that's so in the outer for loop, we'll be writing the row as many times as we need. Okay, so if we want to resize four times, then we'll have it write out the row four times. Okay, that'll be a for loop. And then within that for loop, because when I say write out a row, we can just use the same code that we used here in line 84. We can write out the horizontal resizing as many times as we need. Does that make sense? So I'll say this again. So there's a loop. Can everyone see the blackboard here? So there's a for loop here. And what this will do is to write the current row n times. Okay. Can everyone see can everyone see this? And does everyone understand why this would do the vertical resizing? Yeah? So this is the vertical resizing. And when I say write the current row, this is another for loop of its own that says write the current pixel n times. And this is the horizontal resizing. Okay. Does anyone see it now? It's so it's a for loop within a for loop, and basically what it does is write the current pixel n times n times, so n squared times. Yeah? Does that look good? Okay. So this is very important because it's a crucial part of the resizing, and it's the reason why vertical resizing is a little more difficult than horizontal resizing. Okay? So if you've got that, that's great. Yeah? Can I continue? Okay. We allocated a memory using malloc. How many bytes of memory are we going to want to malloc? Each pixel is how big?
3 bytes.
It's 3 bytes, yeah. And an alias for 3 bytes is size of RGB triple. Instead of hard coding the value 3, we'd probably want to use size of RGB triple, which was 3, right? Because RGB triples are 3 bytes. We call malloc with size of RGB triple times the number of pixels in a row. Okay, and then we probably want to count the padding as well. So we'll want to do some calculation of paddings again, and we can reuse some of the code that was in the original copy.c for that. Okay. So we allocate that huge chunk of memory, we read the row, and then we do those two for loops. And then after we've written that, we want to free the memory. Okay. So always remember that when you malloc some memory, you have to free the memory, or otherwise you're going to end up with memory leaks, which will slow down the system. Okay? Does everyone understand resize.c now? Okay. So the last part of the problem set, and perhaps the most interesting, the most fun, is image recovery. Oops. Okay, so image recovery. So you all heard the backstory, right? David went and took some photos, you know, did a format or corrupted the memory in some way. Apparently he's not very technical. So he's done something weird with the flashcard that he had, but he was able to dump that flashcard into a file that's in the distribution called card.raw. And that's the file that represents every byte that was in the original card. Okay. And so within those bytes, you'll probably find fragments, or rather bits of JPEGs floating around. Okay. Well, it's not bits of JPEGs. It'll be entire JPEGs that are sort of put into this mush of raw bytes. Okay. So your job is to go through the card and then to pick out those JPEGs and save them into separate files so you can open them up in other programs. Okay. Does everyone see what the task at hand is? Okay, so one thing that we can actually use, it's actually not very difficult to do this because there's something called a signature in every JPEG file. So a JPEG file is the file format that stores all these photos. Cameras usually use JPEGs or another type of file format called RAW. So when we encounter a JPEG in the file, when we open up a JPEG in XXD or in any hex editor, you'll find this kind of output. I actually opened up one of the photos that were found in card.raw using XXD, and this is what I found at the beginning. You can see here 0000000 represents that it's at the top of the file. So you can see here that the first the first few bytes are FFD8, FFE0. Okay, so this is what's called the JPEG signature. And it's either this, FFD8, FFE0, or FFD8, FFE1. And that's also in the PDF. But so these two are the signatures of JPEGs. And every single JPEG file that's known to mankind will have those first few bytes in it at the beginning of the file. Okay? So so we can actually use this as sort of like an anchor to find all these JPEGs that are in this mush. Okay? So it's difficult to just grab into the card file and then retrieve the JPEGs. We have to know where to start looking, right? So we can begin to look at a JPEG when we find the signature in the card file. Okay. So it's not guaranteed that when these bytes occur that it'll always be the beginning of a JPEG, but there's a good chance that they will be. Okay. So what can we actually do with this? There are just a few steps involved in this image recovery program. The steps is go through each block in the disk image. And so what is a block? So these cards, these compact flash cards and other cards are stored using something called a FAT file system, FAT, file allocation table, file system. And you'll learn about that in the problem set spec as you work through it. And there's a questions.txt file that you have to fill out after you've done some reading on FAT file systems. Anyway, the details aren't very important to the image recovery. It's just that usually these FAT file systems are divided into what are called blocks. And in this case, it's 512 bytes each. Okay, so you can imagine this, if this table were the entire FAT file system, then each of those would be 512 bytes each. That's a block. Okay, so it's just a logical way to divide each of the divide a file system into parts. So we're reading each block in the disk image instead of reading each byte in the disk image, because it's faster that way. So fread is actually pretty slow, but when we read entire blocks of memory, entire blocks of the disk into memory, it's much quicker. Okay, so instead of reading one byte at a time, we're reading 512 bytes at a time. Okay, does everyone see where we're going with this? Okay, and then when we read each of these blocks into memory, so basically this, I'm saying this is a for loop of sorts. So for each block in the disk image, first, if we find a JPEG signature, so how do we check if we've found a JPEG signature? One thing the PDF does tell you is that the JPEG signature is always found at the beginning of a block. It's never found near the middle or end of a block. So you can always check the first four bytes of a block to check if it's a JPEG block. If it's the beginning of a JPEG, okay. Can you see how you might do that?
Just equals equals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're actually going to say if the zeroth byte equals equals FF, if byte one is D8, if byte two is FF, and if byte three is E0. So we're going to say if all those equals equals, and then if all that is true, or remember that E0 might be E1, depending on the JPEG. So if all that is true, then we've probably found a JPEG signature. So when we found a JPEG signature, we start writing the bytes out to another file. Okay, so this sounds uncannily similar to copy.c, right? We're just reading some bytes from an input file and then writing that to an output file. So the only difference is that we have a huge input file and many different output files in this case. Okay. Remember that JPEGs may span blocks, because if it didn't span blocks, then each JPEG file could only be 512 bytes long, and that's not a very large image. So if we have a block that starts a JPEG, then we might have another block that continues that JPEG, and then so. It means that if we start writing the bytes out to another file, then we have to continue writing those bytes out until we find another JPEG signature, which is number 2, or if we find the end of the file, end of the card.raw file, we can close the file and say goodbye. So does everyone get what these steps are doing? It's pretty logical, right? It seems to be just one loop, or maybe two loops, that start files and write them out to file, write them out to disk. Yeah? Does anyone have any questions about? Yeah?
So when you write equals equals FF, mm-hmm. do you put cross queues or?
Oh, so when you write when you're checking for the signature, you want to say if byte 0 equals equals 0xFF. Okay. That's a good question. These are hexadecimal numbers, not decimal numbers. So you need to tell the C compiler that you're working with hexadecimal by saying 0x. Okay. Any other questions? No. Okay, so one thing, when we're reading these blocks reading each of these blocks from the card.raw file into memory, how do we do that? What's the function that we use to read from a file? F. Oh, yeah, we have to open the file first with F open. Yeah, that's true. And then we can read each of the 512 byte blocks using F read, right? So, so remember that when we called F read, we had to specify. So we had to specify how many bytes we had to read. So that's 512. And then, what kind of memory are we going to store our bytes into? So remember, fread takes the first argument of fread is a buffer, right? And that buffer has some kind of type, right? Because a buffer is an address, but an address always points to some kind of data which has a type. What is the type in this case? So basically, what I'm asking is, what is each byte? Is it an int? Is it a long? Is it a string? Well, it's one byte long, so what could it be?
Char.
Yeah, that's very close. Well, specifically, what kind of char? Char, not, yeah, so it's not just a char, but a... Pardon?
ASCII.
ASCII? It's not. So what I'm saying is, what? So there are two types of char. There's a signed char and a
unsigned
char. So what's important here is that it's just one byte. So it's when we're going to represent each of these bytes, then we only have the positive section of the bytes. So instead of unsigned char, we can actually use the type byte if we include bmp.h. Because remember, at the top of bmp.h, we said type def unsigned char byte, which means a byte is equal to unsigned char. But depending on your preferences, you might not want to include the whole bmp.h. You might just want to copy type def unsigned char byte. Or you might just want to use unsigned char as it is. Okay. So does anyone have any questions before we end? Okay. So if you have any trouble with the problem set, please use the bulletin board. It's always open, and a lot of help is available there. And there will be no walkthrough next week because this problem set is due in 2 weeks. And good luck on the midterm on Wednesday. Thank you.